Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm joined for the second time by someone I've admire a lot in the industry. We've actually connected a bunch here in Ottawa, and I need to get out to Calgary as well. But the one and only Julian McKenzie of Everywhere, of The Athletic, Sportsnet, the CJ Show. I guess Julian, when do you sleep? Is this do you is it 11:30 every night? Like, how do you survive, Julian?
I wish it was 11:30 every night. Depends on the day, I guess. I don't know. I probably should do a lot better with sleep, but at least now it's been a lot better. Just with the fact that it's the summer and not as much is going on. So, yeah, during the regular season, I get my work in playoffs if it comes to that. But I'm looking forward to the next few weeks where I can just relax and just be a regular human being.
Was this second year on the Flames beat? Was it similar to the first year? Was it quite different? Like, there's a lot of intrigue, a lot of trades. What was it like for you just covering this team last year?
Very different in the sense that, like, the first year you're dealing with a team that has all these high expectations to make the playoffs and they fall short of them. The second year, those expectations are still there, but they get extinguished much quickly and much more quickly. And then it gives way to this prevailing storyline of which players are going to stay and which ones are going to leave. And documenting all of that and documenting a team that was trying to keep its head above water despite everything else going on, I think was very it was it's definitely one of the more unique stories I've ever had to cover in my journalism career. And I'm very intrigued about what season three is going to be like for me, because the first 2 years were the goal at least was to make the playoffs and it didn't happen. This coming year, it's we know it now. It's a rebuild. I know some people are going to say it's a retool or reconfiguration or whatever, but it's a rebuild. You don't have all that cap space and all those players gone, and even the talent on your prospect core, and think otherwise. I think just this team's going through a transitionary period, and it might take some time before they get out. I mean, maybe they end up being a good team by the time the new building comes together, and maybe 2027. But yeah, this is a chapter that honestly a lot of Flames fans have wanted. They don't want them to be in that mushy middle where they try to make the playoffs when they know they're not good enough. There's some pain that's going to be coming, and I wonder how much Flames fans are ready for it. But there's a lot of Flames fans who would much rather this course of action as opposed to the alternative.
Why do you think, you alluded to it, and that the Flames, in my lifetime, I can't remember whenever they've really intentionally rebuild. Obviously, they've been poor some years and got Matthew Tkachuk at, I think, the sixth pick back in the day, but those weren't teams that were trying to rebuild. Why now? Is it just as simple as Johnny Hockey and Matt Tkachuk leave, and then it kind of snowballs from there? But why do you think it ultimately led to this?
Well, you lose all those players, whether through trades or free agency and what have you, and you clear out all that cap space. I think it was just time. I think you go back to that summer where Johnny Gaudreau leaves and Matthew Tkachuk leaves. I think now the prevailing sentiment among fans, I don't know if the team would go out and say this, but I think among fans, people feel that summer should have been the time when the rebuild began. Like, that's when you take Matthew Tkachuk and you flip him for future assets that help you down the line. That being said, people thought that deal for Jonathan Huberdeau and Uyghur and the first round pick and Cole Schwent, people thought it was a really good move at the time. And I don't think it was a complete failure either. I get Huberdeau is not necessarily playing up to that contract, but you got a career season out of Uyghur. You still have a first round pick. And you have a defensive-minded center prospect who maybe has a future in your organization. I still think the thinking at the time wasn't completely wrong. It's just the pieces together just didn't work out. And the Flames, I give them credit because past history has shown that they would try to make something work to try to be a playoff team. But Craig Conroy stuck to his guns about only offering short-term deals. And now they look like a team that, I mean, I don't think they're necessarily going to purposely tank, but I don't see them being that much better than like than a San Jose or a Chicago or an Anaheim. I mean, they might be slightly above those teams, but I think they're going to be a lottery team entering next year. And then after that, you're trying to build upon that with the young players that you have, and then you determine whether or not, depending on whatever summer it is, if it's the right time to add free agents to your core or make a significant trade to add a young player. Like, I think right now it's, again, it's going to take some time before they get to where they want, but now's the time to do it. I think just an opening provided itself with the exodus of players leaving, and now it's on them to build up from there.
How would you maybe evaluate Craig Conroy's job so far, and of taking the mantle of trying to rebuild, and obviously trading Tanev, Zadorov, Hanifin? How would you say he made out on those deals? Obviously Mangiapane too. Like, he's made a there's been a lot of big deals, a lot of departures from the team 2, 3 years ago. Just how do you think he's done so far as the first part of the rebuild?
I think overall he's done a good job. I know I've nitpicked on some deals, like the Noah Hanifin trade, where you only get a, I think it's like 2026 first round pick. Sorry, not that you only get that. There were other pieces, but I still think that was the key asset that they need to focus on, just getting a first round pick for him. I know in the Chris Tanev trade, I kind of poo-pooed it a little bit. The Jacob Markstrom one, I poo-pooed it a little bit too, but maybe Kevin Ball really just turns into a top four defenseman. It takes time for defensemen to develop, and they do need defensive defensemen in their system, especially with all the offensive-minded guys they have coming up in their prospect stable. So I can understand the thinking on that one. I think overall, though, the fact that he was able to clear the cap space, the fact that he was able to build up the prospect pool, the fact that he has a lot of draft capital to play with, that's still really good for a first-time GM for him to clear the deck. Again, he could have easily gone an alternative route where he still tried to be competitive with the roster players like Nazem Kadri and Michael Backlund still wanting to win. You could throw in Jonathan Huberdeau as well with his comments in La Presse too. But I give him a lot of credit for, again, just sticking to his guns and trying to start this rebuild. And hopefully it'll put the team, at least for their sake, on a path of genuine contention that fans can get behind and appreciate. If it doesn't work, then that's going to be a whole other story. But yeah, I don't know if you'd need like a letter grade. I'd give him like a B or a B plus, I think, at least for the start of it. The next step is, what other assets is he going to add? Who else is he going to move off this team? Again, I mentioned Backlund, who, if I try to think if he's a UFA coming into this season or the next one, but this is a player who's up there in his age, and I feel for him a little bit considering the fact that he signed on to win, and it looks like he's going to be just kind of shepherding this team through this transition period as their captain. I wonder about Rasmus Anderson's future, a guy who was drafted by the organization, has played through some ups and downs, and has seen a significant amount of turnover with this team. Blake Coleman's a guy who's signed for the long term as well, who's also a good leader in that room. I wonder about his future. There's a lot of guys still on that team who, entering this season, I wonder how they feel about this team being where it's at and how long they're willing to stick around before things might actually get better. Or, hey, maybe they prove us wrong this year and they show enough life to show that the season after, maybe that's the year they try to make the playoffs again. But yeah, I think as a whole, I give Craig Conroy a lot of credit for being able to weather that storm and make all these different transactions to put the team in the position he's in right now.
Do you expect anything in terms of you alluded to all those guys that are a bit older in age, Backlund, Coleman, even Kadri as well? Do you expect those types of players to be dealt, and that the Flames do a type of San Jose or Chicago rebuild where you just tear everything to the ground, or do you think they're going to kind of ride those guys and with the young players and try to maybe not be too bad, because we've seen, you know, here in Ottawa, if you are bad for a long time, that becomes part of your culture as well.
Yeah, I think the Flames want the second of the two options. They've mentioned the Dallas Stars model, where they had a point where they needed to do well in drafts to build around their aging veterans who weren't playing as well, and they did use free agency and trades to make themselves better while trying not to foster a losing culture. And now we look at Dallas as a team that's among the NHL's elite. I think they're going to win the Stanley Cup next year. I've picked them to win the cup ahead of the playoffs this year. I think they still have enough to win it next year. And yeah, I think Craig Conroy has been consistent in not trying to foster a losing culture. And I've written about this before too, but Ottawa and Buffalo are kind of cautionary tales of what could happen if you go on a rebuild and you try to be as patient as you can. But if you don't see the results, you're just losing year after year after year after year. And you're wondering where the light at the end of the tunnel is. So I think the Flames definitely want that second option, where you're building around those veterans. They're helping along the young players. You're trying to get everyone to just at least have that feeling of winning, even if the team doesn't look as if they're going to do it, as opposed to a San Jose type rebuild where you're getting everyone out of there and it's like a liquidation sale. Like, everything must go, and you're not expected to win for a long time, but at least you're getting some high draft picks and you're hoping that those picks can carry you to the next level.
And with that, you know, you talk about the Dallas Stars, they hit on all those picks, right? With Heiskanen, Stankoven, like they, Wyatt Johnson,
Thomas Harley, yep. Jason Robertson, like their drafting is ridiculous. Like, and it's funny too, whenever the Dallas model gets mentioned in among Calgary fan circles, it's like fans, the next question for them is, do you trust this team to draft as well as the Dallas Stars? Do you trust any team to draft as well as the Stars have done over the last how many seasons? It's really difficult to do that. And on top of that, it's one thing to draft really well. You have to give credit to a team for helping prospects along and ensuring that they're not rushed and they get a sufficient amount of time to get seasoned either in junior or at the American Hockey League level, and putting them in the right spots at the NHL level, so that way they could turn into the solid contributors you expect them to be at that top level. But yeah, like I the Dallas Stars over the last how many seasons in terms of their drafting, I can't think of any other team that's equaled them on that playing field. Like, seeing a guy like Wyatt Johnston ball out in the playoffs, considering where he was, there's a lot of people who wondered, why did he fall as far as he did? Or Logan Stankoven was a second round pick. There are Flames fans who are upset that they didn't get him and they ended up with William Strongren instead, who could still turn out to be a solid pro player. But seeing a player like Stankoven be NHL ready a lot sooner, I know some Flames fans have gritted their teeth over that particular pick. But yeah, I the Dallas Stars are looked at as a model for a reason, and their drafting and their development, it's been amazing for this team, and it's led to their success to this point.
And I guess with that, obviously, you were at the draft recently, and they picked Zane Parekh. Just maybe you wrote about him too, and it was a kind of cool story about him signing his pro contract and everything. But just what do you make of him as maybe the future star of this Flames team, especially heading it out of hopefully the rebuild in a couple of years?
You mentioned an important word there, star. The Flames, in order for this rebuild to work, they need stars. They need blue chip prospects. They need high quality players. And that was the biggest thing for me in all of Craig Conroy's wheeling and dealing, where I thought he did well. I maintain that he did a good job overall, but the biggest thing was acquiring noteworthy prospects that you could hang up on the marquee in a couple years, especially when that new building opens, and say, this person's a part of our future, this person will be a part of our present, and he will help us lead to the promised land and get Stanley Cups. Zane Parekh is a player who can hopefully put this team in, on that path. I think he's the most exciting prospect in their system since Matthew Tkachuk. And I get it. There are fans who wanted TJ Ginla, obviously for the name and lineage, but there are still fans who were really excited
Yeah.
about the star potential of Zane Parikh during Def Camp and the behind-the-back passes, the spin moves, the skill. The Flames don't have enough of that in their system, and they still need to have that type of quality at forward. They've amassed a couple of good prospects in Matthew Coronato, and maybe there's still a little bit more to be desired in a guy like Sam Hanzsek. But if you look at their defense, Zane Parikh leads that charge. Hunter Pustevich, who they got in that trade with Vancouver, also a part of that charge as well. He'll probably play AHL minutes this year as a 19-year-old, soon to be 20, before the end of the calendar year. A guy like Henry Muse, who has put up some points in the OHL, started off as a forward, turns into defense. He needs some more time, but that's a player who they make that makes their prospect system better. Etienne Morin, who's also signed an ELC as well. It's another puck-moving defenseman. They needed that quality at the back end, but they also just need that quality, period, in their system. So, yeah, I think just specifically with Zane, to go back to your initial question, I think with the quality that he has and the flair that he shows, he fills a need that desperately needed to be filled with this organization. He also comes across as like a quietly confident kid. He has some humility. He has humility to him too, but I think he definitely knows he has that talent, especially when he's on the ice. Off the ice, I think he's trying his best to he did his best with us to let everyone know that, you know, there's still ways for him to go, and there's all these parts of his game, all of his game that need to be fixed. And I know he needs to add a couple pounds too. That's what he at least told us. But this guy definitely knows he's a good player, and that's a good thing. And that's also something that needs, that's a need, that confidence, that flair, that excitement level, that's also needed for the Flames.
Is that something with maybe the other players as part of this rebuild that maybe are at the NHL level, that the way you sell a rebuild is hope and excitement? And even if you're losing games, but if you see a Connor Zary, you know, Peltier, like all those guys, like, is that something that for this season for Flames fans, that's maybe what they have to hang their heads on, is the young guys that are kind of coming up, and maybe they won't win 50 games, but they might be exciting to watch.
Yeah, you have it right. CJ says it all the time. You're either selling winning or you're selling hope. And I think this is going to be one of those seasons where the Flames are going to sell some hope. And you mentioned some of the prospects already. Dustin Wolf might have the biggest spotlight of all of them, considering the fact that it looks like he's going to get more NHL time this year with the way the goaltending situation looks. You don't have Jacob Markstrom in the fold anymore. It's just going to be him, Dan Vladar, and Devin Cooley battling it out. And look, even though he's a seventh round pick, and even though he's only 6 feet, the pedigree has shown that he's won. He's a winner at every level, and it's on him to translate that at the NHL level. So, yeah, I Dustin Wolf's at the forefront of those prospects who a lot of fans are going to be very hopeful for, and it's on the team to also create those spots for other players like Peltier and Coronato in their lineup so they can see more time. And I think as the season goes on, there's other defensive prospects. I'll even lump in Artem Grushnikov and Yanni Yermo as well, who maybe they play their way into the lineup depending on how things go, in addition to Hunter Pustevich. But if they're just guys who get that time at the American Hockey League level, that's fine too. I also get that sense that the Flames aren't necessarily in a rush to just have all these young bodies on in their lineup, which also is the right move too. You don't want to necessarily start a whole bunch of rookies in your lineup who get thrown to the fire and potentially lose their confidence if things don't go well. You ease them into your lineup, you put them with NHL ready veterans who can show them the way. That's why Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil worked out so well, getting those opportunities alongside Nazem Kadri, who knows a thing or two. He's a winner as well. So yeah, I think the Flames are gonna try to continue that method with some of their other younger players coming up.
And I'm just curious because I was listening to you on the radio talking about Dustin Wolf and his next contract, and you were looking at comparables like Seelovs and Jet Greaves and others. Is that what you expect, that it's maybe a bridge deal at close, maybe a bit under $1 million. Do you think that will happen shortly, or where do things stand with
I
Dustin?
think on that, like, just I've tried to check in on the camp. It seems like there's been it's been quiet, but not as like a bad thing. I think it's probably just one of those situations where when it comes time to deal with it, it'll be time to deal with it. So nothing to be alarmed about on that front. I think it's just it's the middle of the summer. People are probably still at their cottages. I mean, maybe Craig Conner's taking time for himself. Who knows? But yeah, I think the comparables at least are a good place to start. Also, I'll give a hat tip to Ryan Pike from Flames Nation, who's also written about this as well. Like I know I wrote about it a couple months ago in a mailbag and brought up comps like Caden Primo in Montreal, who signed a 3-year deal. Samuel Hurstad in Philadelphia, who has a lot more time under his belt, but the 1.4 million AAV, I think it's 1.425 around there. People are I in conversation with Aaron Vickers, I think we were wondering about how close that comparison is. I can understand the thinking of trying to, not nickel and dime Dustin Wolf, and I don't think the Flames ultimately will do that, but I just wonder with all the other dollar amounts out there, if the Flames just go closer to that and not necessarily think of it as, let's lock up Dustin Wolf for all these years, right? Because he still has to prove something with more NHL time. And I still think 2 years is a suitable amount of time where you give Dustin that opportunity to get himself to give himself more time to acclimate to the NHL level and try to be this good goalie and work in tandem with Dan Vladar. I believe he's also waiver exempt for this coming season too, and at the year after that, not so much. I'd like to think there's still some leverage on the side of the Flames, but if it ends up being a 3-year deal, like what we were discussing on radio earlier this week, and they go above the mill, I mean, I don't necessarily think that's a bad deal either. I was just trying to figure out, based on what's out there, if that ends up being a lot closer to what the Flames end up doing. But yeah, I could totally see it as more of a bridge deal situation. A 2-year deal could be three, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was just a 2-year deal and the AAV was north of 900,000.
Well, I'm just curious, and more bigger picture, just with the Flames. I think they have the most, without cap friendly. I feel like my understanding of the salary cap is changing.
Puckpedia still exists, man.
I know
Puckpedia's
I'm
still
on
out
it
there. They do
now.
good work.
They did.
Cap wages is also out there too. Shout out to everybody who's been trying to build up an alternative to cap friendly in the last few weeks, man. Those sites exist, and there's a lot of people doing a lot of great work to continue to inform fans.
I've been on Puckpedia a ton. It's great, but it there's a part of my brain that just only sees the salary cap through a cap friendly
Hey,
frame.
there was a time when people did that with General Fanager. There was another site. I forgive me. I'm blanking on the name that would also be up there too. Forgive me with that. That was also there have been other times. There have been other places where fans have gotten their information, and we've adjusted when those
We will
sites
adjust.
changed. That's literally what's going to happen in this situation. It wouldn't surprise me if in a couple months' time we're just listing off dollar amounts we see from Puckpedia, and we just treat it like regular everyday business. So I'm not like I expect everyone to adjust in due time.
For sure. And my point was more just because the Flames, I believe, have one of, I think it's $20 million in cap space. Just what do you Is that something where you think they'll weaponize it and maybe do a reverse Sean Monahan trade that they made a couple years ago? What do you think happens there with maybe the cap space? Maybe not the off season's dwindling down, but in general moving forward.
I mean, they should do that. I think there's definitely an opportunity for them to look at teams who are in some tough salary cap positions, and you take on a bad contract that's closer to its end. I don't think you necessarily want a longer term bad contract, but you say like there's a just let's just use him as an example here, like a Patrick Laine, who I want to say his contract expires in 2-3 seasons. I'm in summer mode, so I apologize to everyone listening who's all like, man, like Julian's forgetting all these facts. Like, no, like I'm trying to chill. But taking on that contract and if you get Columbus to throw in a high draft pick as well, or a prospect who can help you out to kind of sweeten the deal, and you help Columbus take some salary off the books, you accommodate that salary, and you go from there. That's just a rough example of what I think the Flames should be doing with that cap space. And it's one thing to think about it now. I mean, I think teams are, they've spent a lot of their money, so maybe it's less likely you see it now. But at the trade deadline, you might see something like that. Or maybe you enter the sweepstakes of a deal as a third-party broker and you take on some salary of a player who may want to leave to play on a Stanley Cup contending team. There's definitely some salary cap flexibility available for the Calgary Flames that Craig Conroy has put his team in. And it's the right move if they do that.
I feel I'm obliged to ask you about Jonathan Huberdeau because I think every time I, have a anyone's talking to the Flames, he's always a huge topic of discussion. Just where he is right now in his career, and obviously that contract. Where do you see maybe his game heading into next season? Can he have a bounce back? Do you think he's regressing to maybe the heights that he does or the lows that he doesn't want, or do you think there's a possibility that he maybe gains some steam and comes closer to that player that the Flames traded for 2 summers ago?
I don't know if we'll ever see Jonathan Huberdeau at an 85, 90 point pace, especially with the way the team is right now. Maybe it's going to have to be a situation where if the team acquires some high quality players in the next year or two, which accelerates the rebuild, but would ultimately make a player like Jonathan Huberdeau better, maybe. But I mean, we can be truthful in all this. I think the bar is lower now than it's ever been for him. But I also think the worst is behind him. This is a guy who had 1 point in December in last season. And this guy, he found a way above that. He ended up on a pretty good run not too long after that. And even though his point total still ended lower than his first season with the Flames, he still showed some good things in that second half of this past season that I think can still be encouraging for the future. It all just depends on if he finds consistent line mates, which might still be a challenge heading into this coming season. Anthony Mantha's in the fold now, and people are wondering, and hey, maybe that's a way to get him going. That's a natural person to have chemistry with. But again, depending on how he gets thrown around the lineup, how does that affect him? Like if he ends up being a 60-point player this coming season, that would be a step in the right direction for him. It's an increase from this past the from the last 2 seasons. But yeah, I'll give him this. In spite of the fact that things have gone wrong for him in his Flames tenure, at least in speaking to us, whenever we've tried to talk to him about why things aren't going well, he's made himself available and he's tried to take accountability for at least publicly with us, which I think at least I think that plays a role into why some fans hold some sympathy for him. Because if this was a guy who was more standoffish, didn't really give a damn about some of the younger players on the team, like the relationship between him and Jakob Peltier as an example, that's something you throw up as a positive with Jonathan Huberdeau in that Flames locker room. And again, other guys have also stepped up in the locker room as well in talking to us and have said that he still tries to come to the to games with a positive attitude and he's still a good teammate. Just obviously the points aren't there, but I think if we see an increase in his production, even if it's a small increase, that's a step in the right direction. Like if he's a 20 goal scorer next season, that's a win for him. That's a big win for him. So I don't know. I think that I still think there's still more to come with Jonathan Huberdeau. I know he's what, over 30 now. Like
30,
he's
31.
yeah, he's 31. Like he's I get it. He's in the prime of his career. But he's closer to the end of that prime versus entering it. But I don't know. Like I feel like the Jonathan Huberdeau we've seen over the last few seasons, that's not him. Like I don't think the Flames, it's not a David Clarkson situation where this guy had one really good year and then he gets signed to this massive deal. This is a player who worked
Was
his way up to being as good as he was in that 2022 season, where he was the best left winger in the game and set a record for most assists in the season. And on this Flames team, I think just the play style, a little bit of the personnel don't mesh, but just some of the difficulties he's encountered have also played a role as well. But also, it's on him. It's on him to get out of that situation. It's on him to be a better player. It's on him to put in the work to be the player who signed that contract. I don't want to sound like I'm giving him all these excuses. I can understand there's a different, there's another side to that. But I think with Jonathan Huberto, ultimately, it's on him. He needs to do well. And I've written about that too. And he needs to understand that.
I guess my question would, following up, would just be, how much of an anchor do you think that contract will be when this team hopefully becomes more competitive in 3-4 years from now? Or do you think there's a ability that it won't hurt them too much?
Depends on the players around him. The contract's pretty much buyout proof. So it's not like you can just hit the buyout and say goodbye. Like that would be more of an anchor if they did that. But if he's able to get his game up at a level where he can at least help the team, and there are some good young players around him who can help get the best of him, I mean, it doesn't have to be an anchor. And at least right now, where you have all that cap space, you could do worse. You just have that contract on your books that,
it's not,
you know,
bad.
Is a lot of money, but you have 20 million, over 20 million in cap space where you can alleviate that damage. So I don't think it can, I don't, there's a world where it doesn't have to be an anchor for this team, but again, that's on Jonathan Huberto to make it so, and that's also on the team to continue its development of young players to be good around him too. So yeah, it's a combination of a bunch of factors.
And there was another player that, you know, signed a big contract that summer, Nazem Kadri. I guess you know, he didn't want to come to Calgary at one point in his career. Obviously signed. You know, you mentioned he's a winner. This team isn't close to winning for, you know, a couple years at the very least. Where do you see his fit on this team moving forward? Is it something where he'll ride it out as a, you know, a warrior? Or do you think there might be in the future where you might ask for a trade? Or where do you just see him fitting in this team going forward?
Well, I think the team definitely wants him to continue his current role where he plays on those top two lines, young players play around him and they learn from him and they get better under him. I have questions about whether or not he truly wants to stick this through. I know there were the reports over the draft about his future, and even earlier last season there were reports about him not wanting to play through a rebuild, but he's let the media know at times that he wants to be a part of this team. But I do wonder how long that lasts with the way the team looks and the rebuild that's going on. At the end of the day, like, I know Nazem has the Stanley Cup, but, you know, if you sign a deal as long as he did with the thinking that you're going to win or at least be competitive in that time, and through circumstances, it's not looking like it, I think it's a fair question to wonder how much he wants to continue being in that role and continue to want to be a part of this team. And also, if he plays as continues to play at a high level, I think he's been the best Flame on this team over the past two seasons. If he plays at a high level and someone's willing to take on that contract and there's a deal that works for both sides, you know, does Nazem Kadri waive his no move clause to make that work? I think it's more than fair to wonder about all these potential scenarios for this player. And I think if he wants to stick it out and he wants to be a Flame for the rest of his career, I think that's more than fine too. I think the team would look at that situation and say, hey, you know what? If you're willing to continue to help us along as we go through this rebuild and help us get to that next level, even as an older player, hey, I don't think they necessarily hate that. But I think it's more than fair to ask questions about Nazem Kadri's future. And even if he does continue to say, hey, I want to be a part of this team, the next step is wondering, okay, well, how long until this team becomes a player again? So that way, Nazem Kadri could still max out the twilight of his career.
I wonder if he's going to be playing at that new arena in a couple of years. That's what I'm thinking about, and that's my best segue I can possibly have to the arena. And you're there in Calgary. I'm just curious what the pulse is of about finally getting a new arena, how much excitement there is, and maybe how much do you think that'll transform the Flames organization in a way just by having the right facilities. And I don't think it's I was listening to your show. I don't think it's necessarily why players don't come, but to Calgary or want to leave, but it definitely isn't something that helps.
I think of there's a few like when Mackenzie Weegar got
Yeah.
introduced to the Flames, and there's a video of him walking through the locker
Green light.
room, and you're just kind of like, I mean, oh, here's what I'll say about the facility. It this needed to happen. This new arena, I believe Monday is when they're going to make an announcement about it, and then the sod turning event and all that. I think the rink, with all of its charm and with the history attached to it and the different events it's hosted, I think it was time for an upgrade. It was time for a new, it's time for a new building. And it's not, I give the Flames credit for trying to make it work in that arena as long as they could, but I think there's genuine excitement around the organization for that new space, which is also not going to be too far from where the Saddle Dome is right now, and hopefully still accessible for fans as well through the entertainment district that they're building up around it. Yeah, it's not the reason why players would want to get out of Calgary, the Saddle Dome, but I mean, you got to have your facilities at a high level so that way you get the best out of your guys. Like, I don't know. I think the fact that it got mentioned the way that it did by Uyghur,
Yeah.
I don't think he's the only guy who was thinking the way
No,
that he was feeling
he
about
isn't.
that arena. So
No way.
yeah, I it was definitely it was definitely a much needed change. And we'll see if it gets done on time for 2027, as my colleague Eric Francis originally reported. But yeah, I think just for the sake of the team and for fans too, this is something that was very needed for the organization. Absolutely. I will miss the catwalk.
I was gonna ask, is that
I will
are
miss
you afraid of
I
heights?
no but I have
Okay.
seen I don't know if I've ever told the story before live, but I remember one time, I don't know who the I you know what, I won't say who the team was because I don't want to give any clues, but someone who used to work in broadcasting for a particular organization once showed up on the catwalk before a game, and I was there and another reporter was there, and they come up to us and they're like, hey, how do I get to the broadcast side of the building? So for people who don't understand, how many feet up in the air at the Saddle Dome, there's this giant, we call it a catwalk, where first off, you're walked obviously walking up all these stairs, you take an elevator, you walk up these stairs to get to one entrance, and you walk along this bridge high up above all these fans, and you enter this one side. Depending on where you're coming from, you could either be on the broadcast side, or you could be on the side where all the print journalists and scouts hang out. And this person came through on the print side. We'll call it the print side for the sake of the story. And they see me and they see the other reporter, and they're asking the question, like, how do I get to that other side? And I'm pointing at the bridge that literally crosses through the middle of the ice. You're basically like walking across the top of the scoreboard. Like literally, if you're walking along it and you have your phone, see, like, imagine if you
You're
thought
like,
about doing it in the middle of a game, like just you have your phone and then oops, you like drop it. That like drops on the ice,
yeah.
or like a pencil or something like that. Like that's a wild scenario to be a part of. And this person like is looking out at the distance at that walk, and he's like, are you guys serious? Like, really? Like, we have to do this? And we're like, yeah. And this person's like, can you walk me to the other side? Like, this person was that scared. This
Oh my
person
God.
has
That would be
like was
me.
the only thing I'll say about this person is that they're a former NHL player, and
Wow.
like they're like come on, like hockey players, play through all these injuries, get beat up, black eyes, play through all this pain and stuff. Like, there should be these fearless people. But this damn catwalk brought this man to the point where he needed journalists to walk him from one end to another. And I just couldn't believe that was happening. And even after that, like a beat reporter for the other team that was in town was texting with him and was, and the unnamed player was like, yeah, my legs are still shaking. And like, I don't want to say I can't look at that person the same anymore, but like, no. Like yeah. I'm not going to go that far, but I'll say that that's how daunting walking around that catwalk can be for some people. I'm okay with it because I've walked along it enough.
Yeah.
But there are people who look at that and they're just like, no way. There was like another guy who like tried to walk in, also a former NHL player, who like couldn't even, like, I'll give the other guy credit. Like, he at least walked through it. There was another guy I heard just straight up was just like, nope, I'm not doing it. I'm like, just, I'll hang out and watch the game in some other part of the arena. Like, wow. It will bring people to their knees. That catwalk will bring people to their knees.
I just love how a guy will take a slap shot to the face, but
yep.
can't walk on a catwalk.
He can't walk along the Saddle Dome catwalk.
Yeah.
Like, that is pretty nuts to see.
I, before I let you go, I and thank you so much for taking the time. I have been listening to your show a little bit, and you're a Montrealer at heart that I know. Obviously you reside in Calgary. So I have a question that kind of brings the two together, and we'll see kind of where your heart lands. But the question is Stampede or Oshiega?
I'll say Stampede only because it's a longer event.
Okay.
It's way more stuff. It's not really fair to compare because Oshiyaga is like a standalone 3-day event. You're on one part of the city, one island, and you're getting all these different shows. And it's an amazing time to take in all these great shows and concerts and whatnot. Stampede is like, you have that and more. It's like a borderline lifestyle for 2 weeks. You see people walking around the city wearing cowboy hats and cowboy boots. You can go to the grounds and do the traditional rodeo stuff, or you can go to the Coca-Cola stage and watch whatever free show is going on. Or you can go to the Cowboys Music Festival where all these artists like Lil Jon or Schoolboy Q or Ty Dolla $ign or Metro Boomin, Bryson Tiller.
Oh my God.
Like
name
like,
dropping. Holy
it's
shit.
It's insane. That those are people who were here this year. Like,
really? Oh my God.
Yeah. Like it's not a fair comparison. It's like, think of it as like Cowboy Coachella, where it's just like people are just like, there's like a country tinge to it. Like the it's a really cool experience. And like the last 2 years I've been able to attend events through it, like people from across the country and all over the world show up and have themselves an amazing, amazing time. So yeah, Stampede better than Oshiaga, but it's a completely different
difference
experience. Like I know friends who will have like house parties for Stampede or pre-games and all that. I don't know any friends who are going to be doing like parties for Oshiaga. It's either you're going to Oshiaga or you're not going to Oshiaga.
Yeah.
And Montreal's cool enough of a city where you don't have to go to Oshiaga to
have a
hang
good
out.
Time.
Like the city doesn't stop for Oshiaga. Like, that's just something you could do. And there are so many other cool things you could do around the city. Like, it's not exactly a fair comparison to make, but I do highly encourage my friends all across Canada to take in Stampede if you can, even if it's just for a couple of days.
It's on my bucket list, Julian. You've Country Coachella or whatever you said. That's on my,
yeah, or Coachella. I don't know if Coachella is a better name,
Couchella.
But like it's worth the time. There's something for everybody, and people from, again, like all over, whether you're black, whether you're white, whether you're Asian, with anything, it doesn't matter. Latina, it doesn't matter. Like, people show up and show out for these events. That's the biggest surprise for me with Stampede. Like, if there's something for everybody at these events.
You've sold me. The only thing is that they ever win a cup in Calgary, they need to have the celebration delayed till the stampede. That's what we need to do. That's what
I don't even think you need to delay it. I think if you're the Flames, like there's a perfect. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a parade that kicks off the stampede. Why not just fuse it together? Just have the Flames walk through the parade route that you would normally have for stampede. I mean, maybe you have to deal with crowd control a lot more than you normally would for stampede, but you basically have a route carved out already. Like, that's just an idea.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I don't want to keep you too long. Thank you so much for introducing me to the Cowboy Coachella idea. And I'll definitely think about going out to the Stampede. But thanks so much, Julian, for taking the time and doing this. I love your work, and it's always an honor to have you on the show. And
thank you. Thank you. Always a pleasure to be on.
And hopefully I can get to Calgary for a game and see the catwalk sometime and the Stampede. And hopefully I see you soon. Is there anything before I let you go that you just want to plug for your 50 different things that you're up to all the time?
Normally I have something to plug, but like I don't really. Just I'm at the Athletic, CJ Show, and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. If you are based in Calgary and you're listening to this, I normally do Radio Thursdays and Fridays with Logan Gordon, but you can always go back and listen to the episodes I did with Aaron Vickers the past few days. Some good content over there. So that's basically it. Yeah, I'm about to go back. I'm trying to be. I got ways to go, man.
Awesome. Well, I hope next season is a fun one for you. Even if they don't make the playoffs, it'll be exciting and there'll be some hope. And
yeah, we'll make it fun. We'll make it fun.
Yeah, you always do, Julian. And thanks so much for taking the time and doing this.
Thanks for having me, man.